Wrestling's pretty good. I watch occasional bits of wrestling.
He has to start recording again now. You fucked it up.
Nah, just leave it in. Just leave it in.
Oh, God. Shut up.
This is going to be the longest podcast ever.
Of War. I am your co-host Alexa Carr, joined by my co-host Jin Tan.
Hello, hello.
And special guest, former NorXO, currently in HanFam, Nidia Masters.
Has it been 100 episodes already? I'm still drunk from the last time.
Nidia has been on the show before. If you have a stomach for it, I encourage you to go check out his debut episode. It was the one we've gotten the most hate mail for, I think, every time except when we talked about World War B. So you've got that going for you. So Nidia, you are now in Horde. Do you have any actual responsibilities? Because I know that place is a real shit show, so I figured you'd get promoted.
Well, you see, sadly, someone decided and found out that I was actually competent, and now I do shit.
Wow, how did they make that mistake?
I answered people appropriately with good advice.
Yeah, doesn't really sound like you. I like you as a friend, but it's really hard to see that, you know, being in, you know, the whole Pandemic Legion thing is changing who you are.
As much as I like treating people like shit, I don't like treating new players like shit.
Yes, you do.
No, wait until they're dumb. Point. I like to wait and prove that they're dumb first and then get a little bit on the mean side. But when they're new, no, I'm helpful, I'm useful, I give them advice.
Okay. We'll let that slide. He was, you know, in fairness, Nidia was pretty decent at running Nor Academy, I have to say. That said,
thank you.
Compassion, not your strongest suit. As Jin chuckles in the background.
Yeah, a little.
Alright, let's get into some shoutouts. I want to give a shoutout to Chesser, Raziel, Greg Yell, Steve Ronikin, CCB Manifest, CCB Guard, CCB Siegel, all the wonderful people I've met at EVE Vegas, including a lot of fans of the show. Even some people that remembered my talk from last year pulled me aside. It was really awesome. Thank you guys for all the support. It was really amazing to see everybody. Some people I met last year and got to meet them again, and a couple first-time fans that I ran into. So it was just a really great experience, as it always is. If you're planning on coming to EVE Vegas next year, make sure you come find me, because I want to talk to you. Jin?
I am going to give my shout out to the judge who took over my quote-unquote responsibilities within the CSM of doing a weekly update whilst I took a brief vacation to America. It was pretty wonderful, and I was glad to not have to worry about that, so... Thank you very much, Judge. You saved my bacon.
How was your America trip, Jin?
It's pretty great.
Talk about that on host highlights, or what's up?
I don't know. I could if I want. I could if you want. I was going to try and keep host highlights to Eve stuff.
Nah.
But yeah, no. I shot a gun and ate a hamburger at the same time. It was pretty great.
Wow, that's the most American thing you could do, Jin.
Yeah, it was great.
Nidia, any shoutouts?
I'm just going to shout out all the people I also met in Vegas, and especially the people that organize all the PanFam events, Elise, Jamier, and the literal 115 other people that I just simply don't have the time to name.
If you'd like your name right after this segment, contact me in-game, because we have advertising spots on Declarations of War with the whole shutdown of EVE Bet, our longest-running sponsor. We are looking for new sponsors, either short or long term. So if you want to get your alliance name out there, you want to get your service out there, promote your website, promote your business, promote your corp, promote your event, contact AlexaFCard in-game and get yourself a sponsorship on Declarations of War.
I will send you 10 million isk right now if you say Jintan eats babies.
Make it 20.
Okay. But you have true to like really you have to put effort into it.
True mercenary fucking negotiating.
Yeah, you can take the I don't remember. You can take the something out of something, but you can't take the something out of the other thing.
Oh my god. You actually have listeners, right?
Allegedly.
Okay.
Until now.
Right.
They all just fucking tuned out, mate.
Let's get into some top stories. Vegas was fucking crazy. That's definitely the top story. So I got in late because I thought they weren't going to do the keynote on Friday. I don't know why I thought that. So my plane is actually pretty late. I got in at like 8 or 9 o'clock. Missed all of Friday, basically. But I did get to meet up with some of the MC and Noir guys at an Outback Steakhouse that took me $40 a cab ride to get to. Just the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. I'm a little displeased. But it is what it is. I got there. I got to meet everybody. Things are tense around the table. But I got lots of free food, which is good. Because I didn't have any money. People gave me like steak tacos and chicken wings and lots of rolls, which for some reason no one wanted to eat. Shame on you. Then we got back to the house. This year the Noir crew bought a Airbnb situation instead of doing hotel rooms. What a good idea. I highly recommend this to everybody. Like, the Planet Hollywood hotels are garbage. It's just the worst. The rooms are small, they're dimly lit, they're smoky. It just sucks. We got this awesome house, which had enough room for 8 people. It had a pool, which we didn't use because it was, I think the heat was broken or something. But we did have hardwood floors, full kitchen, pool table, a big screen TV. It's just the absolute best. So, good choices on there. Definitely doing that again next year. And all told, it was per person about as expensive as one night at the casino hotel. In fact, it's probably a little cheaper. And from there, we just did our thing. Did the Valkyrie tournament, which we're going to talk about in a second. Didn't actually go to too many panels and talks this time around. Mostly it's just hanging out with the Noir guys because I hadn't seen them in a long time. MC did their alliance dinner, which was pretty nicely run. Rare shout out to Ziva for putting that together. It was pretty classy. We did Tournament of Kings, which, you know what, I gotta stop going to, Nidia. It's just, it's always disappointing.
This is unless Kings in there are actually there, supposed to be there.
No, the Kings were there. And it was a lot of fun because we had all of MC in one particular section, which made us by far the most coordinated and most drunk cheering section in the entire building. And everyone bought one of those, like this illuminated Viking helmet, or whatever it is. So they were all wearing it, and they're all slamming the table, chanting for the King of Hungary, to the point where the guy like came up to us after and be like, "Who the fuck are you people?" Hungary, Hungary, Hungary. And that was basically the situation for the rest of the night as well.
Are you sure you guys just weren't, registering their emotional state of being really fucking hungry?
This is after the food.
I've met some of you people in MC, you always look like you're hankering for a bit more.
Well,
I'm calling you.
Admittedly, the food was not that great. It never is, unfortunately. That's the one thing, like, The Tournament of Kings is fun, but it's not as fun, I think, as like actual medieval times. And food wise, I don't think it's as good either. So I think next year I'm just gonna like hit a buffet or something. I mean, for $60 or whatever it is, it's about the same price and get actually better food.
Having been to a medieval times many years ago, it is a hell of a show.
Oh yeah. Have you ever been, Jim?
I have not. I drove past one, and it sounded like the most crazy thing I've ever heard of in my time.
It's pretty wild. It's like having a Renaissance fair in, like, a snow globe. That's the only way I can...
That's a pretty apt description of it, while being fed giant fucking legs of chicken and just meat.
Yep, yep. And for some reason, infinite Pepsi. It's really not to be missed. If you get another opportunity, I would definitely do it. It's just one of those things you kind of have to experience. The last one that I went to, the last real one, even had falconry, which is pretty fucking cool.
Nice.
Yeah. They had like this falcon trainer, and they like throw stuff into the middle of the air, and this falcon would come down and snatch it before it hits the ground. Pretty badass. And of course, there's like sword fighting and jousting. It's good stuff.
If you're a Renaissance
nerd, I can see what Vegas is going for, and they do have a lot of like they have a very high production quality. So there's pyrotechnics, including like some dragon fire, which is legit hot from the back row, which is basically where I was at. You could still feel the heat, which is pretty neat. But you know, I just wish that everything else was up to that level. I baked cupcakes. That was another highlight of Vegas. Alex's famous cupcakes.
I didn't get a cupcake.
Things about those.
That's because you didn't come to the house, did you? I kept inviting you. You just wouldn't come.
It was 4 miles away.
So they not have Lyft in Canada?
Actually, I don't think they do. Also, I don't know what a mile is.
Fair point. To convert it in Canadian measurements, it would have taken you approximately 5 to 10 minutes.
I feel like, while like Airbnb or whatever, a house might have been a good idea on paper, the fact that you were so far away and basically had to Lyft and Uber your way to the venue the entire time, might
still
have...
came out way cheaper.
Really?
Way cheaper.
Hmm. But then you'd be stuck with a lot of people, and considering it was the Noir House, you had a risk of getting cooed out of there, too.
That's true. And Dell was organizing everything, so...
See?
Yeah. Nids, talk to us about your Vegas experience.
Oh, man. So, I'd always said I was going to Vegas one day. I just never really had the opportunity, never really had the money, still didn't have the money. And finally I decided, okay, I've been playing this game for just about 11 years now. If I don't go now, I'm pretty much never going to go to one of these EVE meets. So I finally bit the bullet, just did it, bought the tickets, and said, fuck it, since May. And wondering how I'm going to pay for it. And... you know, you grow up watching movies about Vegas, reading books about Vegas and all that. It just does not do the city justice. It is a complete microcosm of capitalism gone awry, decadence and debauchery, and you love every moment of it.
It is a real shithole.
It's amazing. I didn't want to leave. I still feel like I'm there, I think. Mostly because I caught a bad cold from there.
Probably caught a few other things.
Probably.
You're not supposed to take the cards that the Mexicans keep slapping at you.
Wow.
Don't touch those.
So, I got there on the Thursday to give myself a bit of a breather, because I'm a bit of an old man and I needed a nap at one point, and I'm glad I did, because immediately What ended up happening is there's a bar in the middle of the Planet Hollywood Casino. It's basically a literal circle with like a half dozen couches. Teeny tiny little place called the Heart Bar, which has effectively become Eve's Lost and Found for Las Vegas. If you don't know where you are, you don't know where to find someone, you just meet them at the Heart Bar. You'll find all kinds of people. And immediately I go there, I found tons of PanFam. I found tons of MC. There were goons there. Every group that had more than a few people coming had a contingent there. And this number just multiplied by the factor of 3 come Friday night. And for the rest of the weekend, it was just always full. And we had our own PanFam dinner on Friday night, organized by, as previously mentioned, Jamir, and I think Elise helped out, and may have been one or two others, and we had literally 115 of us. I'm like, Elise did a speech at the end, and I was waiting for him to start crying. He was so happy and moved. It was a tremendous amount of fun, and the food was amazing.
Did you guys go to an actual restaurant? Or more like
we went to a place called Fogo de Chao, which is a new concept for me. It's what we call a Brazilian meat place, where they bring stacks of cooked meat on literal skewers, like a meter long, and they basically come after you with sabers and be like, "You want some meat?" And you're like, "Yeah." And they just keep putting it on your plate, and it's just it's amazing to watch as much as it is to eat, because the meat was absolutely excellent. They're bringing more than one cut. You know, you want some flank steak? Sure. You want some rib? Sure. You want some bacon-wrapped chicken? And then I go to the guy, and I'm like, does anybody ever say no? And he says, yeah. Why? They might be sick. It was an experience. It was a little bit pricey, but it was all you can eat, and it just kept coming and coming, and I'm proud to say I was not the first one at my table to say no.
Nice. I've been to one of those, probably a smaller scale one, considering it wasn't in Vegas. But yeah, man, I know what you're talking about. It's definitely worth a go. I kind of really want to go back to one of those places. I kind of wonder if there are any in my area, because they're really cool. If you've never been, try to go out of your way to find a Brazilian... I think they're called Brazilian steakhouses.
In all honesty, I went to just regular America, and I'm pretty sure I gained a significant amount of weight just from the sheer portion sizes that they give you there. It's pretty ridiculous.
The portion sizes are mental.
Yeah, like I went to Cracker Barrel. That was some good times.
Oh, yeah.
IHOP was the killer for me, though, because I love breakfast food. So that was like... Oh, God.
Poor Jin. If you would like to donate to Jin's diabetes fund...
If you'd like to donate to getting a fucking IHOP installed in my house... please.
IHOP's just so legit. But they're the international house of pancakes, Jin.
And
they're not
in England. I haven't ever seen one in England. I'm so sad.
False advertising.
Well, I'm pretty sure they are international, just not English.
I want to talk about the party. I have to talk about the party.
Let's go.
So, part of the ticket for the whole venue, and you could buy it separately too, was a party at this open-air nightclub at the Paris Resort called Le Chateau. On the third floor, open air, overlooking the strip. You could see the fountains at Bellagio from it. It was amazing. And just the stories that are coming out there. So, open bar party, we go there. And I'm one of the first ones there from the group, and we were coordinating with all PanFam on Discord. So we're still coordinating, even out of game. And we're like, where are you guys? We're all in the tables in the back. Okay. And to get to this place, there was like one elevator, wasn't there, Alec? And it was taking 10 people at a time. And I'm pretty sure by the end of the night we had 400 goddamn nerds, and it was a fire hazard.
Well, for extra context, like the previous years that I've been there, the party is always crowded and packed, and you know, getting up and down is a chore. This year they added an additional 200 tickets. So was even crazier than normal. It was like wall-to-wall people. The lines for the bar were just ridiculously long. The elevators were super slow. It's not the easiest place to get in and out of, but it was still a good time. I convinced the Nora guys to go a little earlier, which is a good choice. They managed to get a table right at the entrance so we could enter and exit pretty easily. It was a little far from the dance floor, which sucked, but the dance floor tables were already taken, so this was like the next best choice. And we managed to get a whole booth just to ourselves.
Man, the dance floor. I was surprised to see how many eveners were dancing. And dancing not like white guys, I mean like well. Must be the alcohol.
Well, I think well is a relative term, but you know, definitely surprising.
That dance floor was full, Permaband was singing live, and that alone was worth the fucking cost of the ticket.
Oh, Permaband was insane. They had the new song, Warped to the Dance Floor, everyone was lit off that, and Wrecking Machine, the crowd went insane. Oh man, I thought if the place had a roof, it would have exploded off. There was just so much noise, everyone singing along, you know, putting their hands in the air, it was amazing. So that was Vegas, man. Oh, dude, it's such a good time. Definitely going to go back next year. One thing I wish is that they put the schedule out a little earlier than they did, just so you know you could sort of plan when you're arriving, when you're leaving a little easier. But, you know, it is what it is. Definitely a shout-out to everyone that's involved organizing Eve Vegas. It's not FanFest level of theatrics, but in terms of content, it's really, really good. It's definitely worth the price. It's worth just going and being able to meet everyone. It's such a pilgrimage of EVE players. A little less so than FanFest, but, I mean, my God, like, the ticket price is like 25% of what you would have to pay, or even less. So, absolutely worth it. If you're anywhere in North America, you got to go to EVE Vegas at least once. And just come be a part of it. It's pretty great.
I was hoping to get down for next year.
Vegas.
Say again, Jen?
I'm hoping to get there for next year if I can.
Oh, yeah, dude. Do it. Do it.
Shout out to the MC guys who invited or at least let everyone else start crashing their suite that they won. And I think I'm pretty sure we had over 100 people there, including some devs.
Yeah, the MC suite was a pretty cool meeting spot. Just very roomy, very well stocked.
Oh, it wasn't roomy when I was there. It was full of people drinking.
I like tapped out pretty early on of the suite festivities. As soon as things started getting crazy, I was like, I'm going back to the house.
He's such an old man.
I know. We played some Mario Werewolf at the MC Suite. Ziva was playing by this like really weird rule set for Are You a Werewolf, where everyone kept their card hidden all the time, and you were allowed to not kill someone during the day. And I'm like playing along with it, and I'm like, what the fuck? This game, it's going very poorly. And sure enough, the werewolves won, like really easily. And so it's like, make sure that they know if they've killed an innocent person. All right. So he's like, do you just want to do it? I said, yeah, let's go do it. So I picked it up, started putting it in. We had this card in the deck called the Tanner, which loses the game when he gets killed. Or excuse me, which wins the game when he gets killed because he's very depressed and hates himself. And the Tanner card was given to Michael, unbeknownst to everyone. And Michael is a Nar guy who is famous for shooting off at the mouth and getting everyone that's not a Nar, and sometimes the people that are a Nar, to hate his guts. So this card...
This guy sounds familiar.
Actually, in a lot of ways. But this card is absolutely perfect for him because he just knows how to get under people's skins. So we started up, and of course, first thing they do is kill this innocent person, and we let them know that they kill the villager. Next turn, everybody's at each other's throats, as they should be in Werewolf. And finally, Michael, I forget exactly what he says, but just starts like going crazy, accusing people of, killing a villager in the first round intentionally. And finally, everyone's like, well, fuck you, Michael, let's kill this guy. And I think on round two or three, they killed him. And sure enough, Tanner, he wins. I was like, wow. The paranoia ramped up so fast, and the viciousness ramped up so fast. It was crazy. I absolutely love Ardy Werewolf. It's my favorite game to play with Eve players, because they're just so built for it.
If you think about it, Eve is basically a gigantic game of werewolves in space.
It is, right? Cause, yeah,
it
you
really
gotta,
is.
You, anytime you have a spy, it's like, okay. Yeah, you know, well, we gotta. Who's spying? Who's the actual helping out? But maybe they're just dumb. Like, it's definitely a thing.
Yep.
All right. So the other big part of Vegas was Valkyrie. They had a Valkyrie tournament, and my God, in terms of like the actual Eve-related stuff that I did, that was probably by far the best. Now, compared to when I first played it, it hasn't changed that much, but the polish level has been ratcheted up on Valkyrie. I played it like 2 years ago, I think. And you've actually got ships that you can pick now. There's four or five ships that you can switch from. I tried the logistics ship for the first time because I saw someone else playing it in the tournament. And I was like, oh, that ship looks cool. Why don't I try that? I was teamed with Chesser and two other gentlemen, one of whose names is really funny, but I don't want to mispronounce it. I wish I could remember them, but my memory's terrible. Sorry, guys. I think it's like Big Dick or something like that. It was hilarious. So I'm hopping in with Chesser, and Chesser is, if you don't know him, apparently regarded as one of the best Eve Valkyrie players, and I can easily see why, because the dude is a phenom. He hard carried our team. Like, he just put the two new guys in really heavy ships that didn't need to do a lot of maneuvering. I was in the logistic ship to try to keep those two alive. And he was in basically a fighter, a dogfighter. And he's just weaving in and out of this thing, killing everybody. We're just there, like, trying to do our best and not feed. But the logistic ship was very fun. The concept is you lock a target, press a button, and it sort of either feeds them shields if they're friendly, or if they're hostile, it drains their shields very slowly, I think. Still cool, though. But in order to keep it working, it's not like Eve where you just lock them, activate a rep, or activate your repper, and then forget about it. You actually have to keep your head, basically. It's supposed to be eye contact, but really it just tracks the head. You got to keep your head looking at the person that you want to rep, and if you don't, then the lock will break. So these ships are like, it's 3D. So they're going up, down, all around, some of them going very quickly. And I'm there just trying to keep my head on these guys. And I know that if my lock breaks, they're going to lose their reps and probably die. So at one point, the point where I knew that Valkyrie was like going to be hot shit. And so I'm repping this guy, repping this guy, repping this guy. All of a sudden, their duel takes a turn where they go over my right shoulder, like over top of me, and I'm like trying to follow them, and I'm literally whipping my head all the way back to the right. It's almost to the point where I fall out of my chair while I'm simultaneously trying to roll my ship so that it stays, so that they stay sort of in front of me. So I'm like practically falling out of my chair with my head all the way back over my right shoulder, and I'm yanking hard on this throttle and trying to keep up with these guys. And like after I successfully did it and I kept the guy locked and he blew the other dude up, I had a moment and I was like, wow, this game is fucking awesome. This game is going to be huge.
It was. Yeah, I've had it for a while. It's such good fun to play, especially with friends.
I kind of really want it now, and I'm kind of like debating, should I get a PlayStation 4 with the VR bundle?
No, just get a fucking good computer, you scrub.
Well, that's a lot more expensive.
Perfection doesn't come cheap.
What else happened with that? We won. My logistics kept almost everybody alive. I think we lost one guy. And Chesser just shredded Reddit team. Like, it wasn't even close. Lydia, you also played in the Valkyrie tourney. How did your match go?
I didn't play in the tourney, but I did play the demo. So my old director, extra shout out to Liddell Teravada of Kane in CBA. He is actually one of the FanFest champions from it and got sent to Vegas on CCP's dime. And that's why we can't have Nice Thing anymore in game. It's because they send people to Vegas. He really, like, I really wanted to try it anyway, and he was there, and he was like, get in line, get in line, get in line. And I get in line, and ends up being behind about four of the other FanFest champions. So, at which point, the Valkyrie dev looked at them as like, if you guys die once, you guys just need to kill yourselves.
Wow.
I was superbly proud to actually kill one of them, regardless of the dying, which, like anything, will come with practice. I enjoyed the game tremendously more than I expected, and like I said previously, I'm just looking for ways to, like, you know, buy a PlayStation or, you know, put money into the computer and just figure out a way to play the game, because it was crazy fun. And even by extent, the Gunjack demo, which granted a lot more arcadey, extremely pretty and superbly fun.
Yeah, I saw Gunjack. I didn't get a chance to try it out. Could you talk a little bit about what that game is like and sort of what state it's in?
It is a complete game, but it is a shorter arcade game where essentially you're playing the gunner of a large mining platform and, you know, ships come after you, at first fighters, and then at one point a purifier warps in, and this purifier, which looks actually quite large on your screen, and like I said, it's a very pretty game, is firing missiles at you, and so you have to shoot it down, and you're essentially, you know, defeating waves of enemies over several levels. You know, a very, very familiar, very classic kind of concept of an arcade game, but extremely pretty. The models are absolutely gorgeous. That there's a moment in the level that I tried where an Abaddon warps in, and you just, like, get a sudden realization of just how massive these ships are, because it takes up the entire screen no matter where you look on it. It was quite fun, and because you could get it essentially on all those platforms, it's worth paying like $6 for it. It's absolutely amusing and great for that.
Awesome. Yeah, $6. That's...
Speaking of arcadiness of that game, does anyone, like, I really hope that this leads to a kind of a revival of arcades in general, because I've got a lot of friends who, you know, probably can't go out and buy a PSVR or something like that, but I'd love to take them to an arcade and, you know, go shoot some spaceships with them.
It was certainly great. I'm very much in that camp with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be cool. I'm a big fan of arcades, generally speaking. Like, I used to love them as a kid, so seeing Eve sort of tap into that even a little bit is kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm sadly a bit too young for arcades. By the time I was old enough to be able to afford to go to an arcade, arcades were dead. Long dead.
Aww.
Floating down the Thames.
We just had those, you know, the little plastic courses that you can stick a penny in and they sort of bob up and down. That was about the limits in my arcade experience.
Yo! Do they have those anywhere other than the seaside? Oh god, those things are so lame, but, like, you still played on them.
There's one in just about every single Walmart around here.
Oh god.
Another reason to go to Vegas, I found an actual arcade. A big arcade.
No way.
I did. It was in the New York Resort. It was a little section up there, like, that is very Coney Island-ish. And they have a fucking roller coaster.
Inside what? The arcade?
Inside the arcade, but, like, it goes outside the resort, and you can actually see the whole city. Most expensive roller coaster I've ever been on. $14. Totally worth it.
I was thinking about going on it, but I believe it goes upside down at one point.
It goes upside down more than once. It's not like that.
I'm okay.
You get motion sickness there.
I feel like you're gonna throw up right now.
It's not that I would throw up. I just don't want to do it. Like, it's not a sickness thing. It's just a, I guess, a fear thing. Like, I don't want to go upside down and backwards. Like, leave me alone. I'm not gonna pay $14 for you to do that.
I'll pay $14 next year for you.
And no, I don't think that's gonna happen.
Okay.
All right. So that was Valkyrie. Very awesome. Try it if you can. I don't know if it's necessarily worth going out and buying VR for, but it's damn close. This is a short but sad story. Deserves a mention, though. Big Country has passed. He's an EVE player, most famously known as a host on EVE Radio. He's also a fellow podcaster. Generally speaking, pretty cool guy. Sort of helped pioneer the EVE talk show. And gonna miss him. Big Country, dead at a pretty young age. Very suddenly. So it was kind of a shock to read that. I almost thought it was a troll, maybe. Because, like, there was no way that he could die. But, yeah. He's gone. So. No cheeky way or you know, smooth transition way to say it, but I felt like it deserved a mention, and he will be missed. I know the EVE Radio team is definitely going to miss him pretty hard.
A GoFundMe, I think, that you can contribute to help his family out. Obviously, they're going to be going through a tough time right now. I think quite a lot of people here may know what it's like to lose a relative, and it's never easy. You know, any show of appreciation is obviously very much appreciated by them.
Big Country was a regular on one of the Pandemic Legion Mumble servers, so, and he was there even just about the night before, so to suddenly see him not there is a bit shocking to all of us and everyone. He was a regular there. He loved to argue with us, and we loved to argue with him. And it was just he was still at the same time still somehow nice to everyone. So we're quite upset to see him go, and even to the point where he was even in the Pandemic Legion Madden League, and they're still a little shocked, and nobody's exactly happy about it, to put it mildly. So, we hope his family's doing well, and especially all his friends. I know he had quite a lot of friends that were basically as close to brothers as you could get with a person.
Mm-hmm. Alright. So, that's kind of a killer, but there is something important that I realized we hadn't talked about much. I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but back when it was mostly speculation. Industrial arrays, or engineering complexes, as they're, I think, being called? Or is it the other way around?
Engineering complexes now, officially.
Okay.
Yeah, because they encompass research. I think that's why they've been called.
Yes. Also, we are calling them now Pokemon, because they have names that evoke memories of Pokemon. Reitaru, I choose you.
Oh god.
So these are the basically Care Bear Citadels, I guess is the easiest way to think of them. They're anchorable structures using the same mechanics as the citadels, but instead of being citadels, which are mostly seem to be centered around having a well-defended place that you can stage out of, these are less well-defended, but have good bonuses for industry, things like research, manufacturing time, manufacturing efficiency, all that kind of stuff. They're more vulnerable in terms of time. I think they have double the vulnerability of a citadel with fewer weapon systems, but they're also cheaper by about, well, I guess it depends on the class, but some of them are significantly cheaper. Which is pretty interesting. I think it makes it a little more accessible to people, a little less scary to think about if you want to, you know, if you want to throw some significant money at it. It's kind of scary if you're putting out like $10 billion-esque for a Fortizar, as you're. But if you're thinking more like $5 to $6 billion for something that could give you some significant profit savings, all of a sudden that looks a little more attractive to the industrial player.
These things are only a good thing for Eve in general. As someone that makes a tremendous amount of his money through things like Tech 2 production, Tech 3 production, quite a bit of research, this is going to consolidate a lot of my efforts significantly, as well as opening it up for to make it easier for partners to get involved, especially out of alliance partners, because that was something that pauses didn't allow easily or at all. And it's in the long run going to be cheaper, it's going to be more efficient to produce the equipment, and I mean, realistically, you could be looking at a significant amount of deflation in the EVE economic model as a whole.
It's possible. I don't know. I think maybe short term, but again, that's hard to say because we're going to have so much demand coming in with the alpha clones. And you're going to have a lot of demand. I think EVE going free to play is going to make a lot of waves and get a lot of people interested in it that didn't think they'd be interested in playing EVE. And that means that there's going to need to be a lot of Tech 1 production and low-end Tech 2 production. I wouldn't be surprised to see if that increases by like 25%.
Oh, definitely. And us in Pandemic Horde, especially in the Nubian Initiative, which is sort of the Noir Academy equivalent, I suppose, where we help to take care of a lot of the new beans and noobs and everything in between. I mean, we pass out quite a lot of ships, and even us alone are just simply looking at installing one of these smaller ones and specializing specifically in production of the ships that we need and things like that, because when we do orders for some of the equipment that we need, we will actually buy out all of Jita and Forge of a specific module in some cases. It could be a serious issue. We're talking like thousands of ships of a single class in some cases. This is sort of one of the advantages that I see in the engineering complexes, is while generally speaking they're much more efficient than the pauses for what they do, in addition to that, they could specialize pretty heavily in specific types of production. Let's say you build mostly interceptors, for example, like I do. You could take your entire smaller or medium engineering complex and specialize specifically in producing interceptors or Tech 2 frigates, and you could come out quite a bit ahead of your competition, even in Forge. And this is an advantage that will greatly change the playing field, in that people that specialize in specific items, specific ships, will come out quite a bit ahead. And people who don't, well, still competitive, may not come out quite a bit ahead. So it's going to add quite a few new cards into the deck of industrialists.
Jin, you've been working on the CSM for a while now. I'm sure you've had a lot of input on the engineering arrays. What's your view, or, you know, what's your... I don't know, I guess just give me your thoughts and impressions on the feature in general.
I, in general, don't have a strong opinion regarding them, because I do not know a huge amount about industry. It's not something that I've personally, like, ever really thought about involving myself in, because it's just not something that's ever appealed to me. And I recognize there are a lot of other members of the CSM, like Steve Ronican, Sullen Decimus, Arif also to some degree, who are very interested in it. So I've generally just left it to them, and, you know, occasionally brought in my own devil's advocate kind of points of view for the sake of shaking up the discussion. But I would not say that I have had any major input on it, really. It's not something that I feel I'm qualified enough to talk about. And that, you know, I can recognize that and as such not interrupt the discussion.
Oh, okay. I'm pretty excited about these. It's the Reitaru, the Asbel, and the Sotillo. The Asbel is the most interesting one for me because it can hold the Market Hub upgrade because it's a large citadel. Or not citadel, but a large structure. But it's also half the cost of a Fortizar. So if you're mostly interested in doing trade and manufacturing, it seems like it's the perfect thing. Maybe not in the most hostile areas, but in some place that you feel you can relatively secure it. I think it's pretty cool. I'm a little concerned about how light their defenses are, but I think that's kind of the point. So, yeah, I'm pretty happy about it. I think it's going to be good. I think they're going to be good. I think structure proliferation in high sex is a bit of a concern in general. I see a lot of, like, forts and Astra houses just cluttering up all over the place. And there's not a lot of groups that are going to take those down. There are some, which is our next story. There are a few high-sec mercs now that are looking at taking out citadels for hire. We're talking about Archetype, Vendetta, and a new group called, I believe, Wrecking Machine, if I'm getting the name correct. I think that's pretty interesting. Yeah, Wrecking Machine. So they're going around and hitting citadels for profit. I think that's cool. There's also some kind of like mutual defense thing between the merc groups, at least Archetype and Vendetta, such that if they take a defense contract against one, the other guy won't attack it. And if one guy takes an attack contract, the other guy won't defend it. I don't know how I feel about that, but I guess it makes sense, especially if they get along. You know, there's no reason if you're mercs to be at each other's throats like that if there are enough contracts to go around, which there probably are if there are only two serious mercenary groups out there right now.
Well, it obviously just leaves like an input for a fourth or fifth party that is actually willing to, you know, risk actual assets for their money.
Well, enter Wrecking Machine, which doesn't care about their agreements and just started some shit. There's a great article on Imperium News called Wrecking Dreams and Mechanics. And they talk about a particular fight where these guys, Test and Dytron Industries, all got into a big Mordek Citadel fight with all sorts of core-popping mechanic craziness, just further highlighting some of the tweaks that the war deck system kind of still needs, especially on the corp side of things. But, you know, it is what it is. It's better than it was, let's put it like that. It still could be a lot better. But at least we're making some progress there. And with Citadels, I don't know what the solution is for HiSec, whether it's some sort of high-sec structure bashing tool or ship that is introduced, like a Tech 2 battle cruiser that acts like a stealth bomber. Maybe it has XL torps instead of large weapons. That could be a thing. Maybe it's a high DPS battleship of some kind that, you know, works very poorly against subcaps. It works good against structures. I don't know, like a pocket dread, I guess. I'm not sure what the solution would be. I don't think nerfing the citadels themselves is necessarily the way to go, but maybe it is. I don't know. I feel like it's just a problem because they're very difficult to kill compared to a POS. And I think just like Titans and, you know, motherships, cost is not necessarily a prohibitive factor in proliferation in EVE. So we're going to see these things. We're going to see more and more and more and more of them. And it's not like they go away if you don't pay a fuel cost. Once you put it down, it's just there forever. So I feel like we're going to see a lot of clutter with these structures. And I think eventually CCB is going to have to introduce some kind of mechanic to address it, whether it's allow players to kill them, have some sort of basic upkeep, or some sort of mechanic, like if the Corp or Alliance goes inactive, something happens to the structure where it's easy to remove.
I mean, we were in Noir for a long time and generally in the game for a long time. I think it's fair that we can both attest that removing towers was particularly easy if you got a large group of people. Because frankly, towers are relatively impotent to even a moderate-sized fleet.
For sure.
And while these engineering complexes and by extension citadels, speaking from someone that has gunning rights and has frankly fired the Doomsday device out of the Keepstar in anger and hilarity, generally speaking, these things do not have much of a prayer to fight back a high-seg subcap force. They simply do not. And that is actually a concern that I have. They're not particularly powerful at doing that. So, I don't think... I mean, these will be prevalent everywhere, and I think they'll replace a lot of the citadels you already see. But anyone that actually wants to remove them, they're simply going to remove them because they frankly can't really fight back, and generally speaking, the small groups that put them up can't really fight back. So I don't think that you're going to see... you will see quite a few of them, but I think the ones that really count and that people really want to remove, if they want them removed, they will simply be removed.
I suppose. I guess I'm more concerned about ones that people don't really care about. Because, I mean, there's no real reason to remove an inactive citadel from a U perspective unless you're looking for some kind of loot drop. It's not like a POS where, you know, if it's there, you can't put something down there.
There's that, but also on a POS, if you're just looking for loot, you could sort of predict what kind of loot you can expect based on the modules that are present. You can't do that at all on a citadel, and a lot of these citadels, even in Heiser, are simply waypoints, if you will. Like, remember, the days of Nyarja not having a station are long gone, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no real incentive to just go on a rampage and remove some of these other than simple griefing. The engineering complexes, on the other hand, I think there will be. A lot of these will be used for production, even on a small scale, for a small corp.
I think it'd be interesting to see if those industrial guys start taking out each other's citadels. You know, just to get that competitive edge. Like, if you know that you're constantly running up against these guys and they're beating you in the market because they have a better engineering array than you. Like, what do you do about that?
I mean, we used to do it all the time in Noir. We would, like, get hired by one competing cartel against the next.
Yeah, but it hasn't happened in a long time. So I'm hoping this will bring it back, maybe.
I think it will, to a point.
All right. Finally, we're going to look at some 0-0 conflicts real quickly. We've got Imperium down south trying to expand their holdings against the Culture. This is going down mostly in the southwest, Del Fountain area. And there's been quite a bit of write-up about it on Reddit. I don't want to go too in-depth, but basically Imperium is a big juggernaut. Culture is doing their best to hang on to what they can. They're making a couple of calculated decisions on, you know, which assets they can reasonably protect and which ones they can't. And Imperium is basically slowly pushing them back and back and back and back and back. Is that too much else to say on that? I don't see Imperium being stopped by realistically anything. So if they want something in Falden, they're going to go take it. And I think that includes all of Culture's money moons. Yeah. I think once they get done with the first wave, apparently there's a big light year gap in Falden that, you know, you require capital ships to go through gates or something like that. I just see Goonswarm just doing that. I don't really think it's going to stop them. So culture was probably going to have to get used to a life with no money moon income. It's just going to be hard for them because they own quite a lot of systems with a lot of upkeep.
I would have enjoyed the parting out conflict, but unfortunately Triumvirate seemed to show no desire to leave, despite bitching constantly that we never fight them fair unless they win, in which case it's totally fair.
And I checked Travis Kilford a while back and it looked like they'd moved on. They're still hanging around.
They're still hanging around like a bad smell. But no, it's actually been pretty good to fight them, to be real. We've learned a lot. But please leave. I want to third party things.
Jin, I didn't really have this on the dock, but let's talk about it. What's going on with Tri? Where are they pushing? What kind of fleets are you guys seeing?
I don't know, but I was literally like watching fucking our Slack because I haven't been playing because I've been in America, and you know, I don't particularly want to try an FC at like 3 o'clock in the morning or whenever it would have to be. I don't know time zones. Time zones are scary and terrible beings. But from what I hear, they've been sticking with their usual. They've been using those rattlesnakes, using their AHAC doctrines, using their Tengus, and just kind of dumpstering people who aren't prepared for them and getting dumpstered by people who are prepared for them. And occasionally getting like blobbed to shit.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, let's keep an eye on that situation. It'll be interesting to see if they keep up with it going into November.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Oh, another piece, speaking of November, December, another piece of interesting information that came out in one of the recent dev blogs about the industrial arrays, and I guess we'll talk about it more in another episode, but starting in the December release, no new outposts will be able to be deployed. Beginning of the end for structures. We could see outposts and passes going away in 2017. That would be something.
This is sort of something that was publicly published on a roadmap, I think, like as early as 2 years ago. And they said at one point that one of the things they're going to do is they're simply going to turn off the ability to make new outposts. And as someone over the years has built with his own two hands, some of the outposts around Eve, it's a bit saddening to see, but at the same time, I'm like, yes, progress.
I'm not too sad about it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy that they are like making a stand and actually just turning off station. Outposts, shouldn't call them stations, but they are stations. Yeah. It would be appreciated if they'd fit like. Just get everything cleared up with the Citadels first, though. Because I think we're going to see like a pretty big rush right now to plant down a couple of plant down stations into very key points around the map. Although, from what I know, they will eventually be destructible. Which is pretty crazy.
Feature parity that's not present, and still some bugs that are like bad bugs that are still around, and that's not good. I mean, Pandemic Horde, every fleet op we go to, there's a big exodus of everyone running to the station in fucking in system to simply insure their ship, and that's not a good thing.
No, it's not.
I mean, again, like, especially in the case of insurance, something that's like so basic, especially for new players, they simply don't understand the issue. I feel like these are, you know, parts of the game that should have been present either before or immediately after Citadels were first deployed. I mean, you say we're, in general, finally taking space, but I mean, while yes, the actual soft changes have been slow, I mean, we've crippled their logistics, their super capital arrays are burning, and their moons are going away, so I would advocate that we're winning the war based on, you know, crippling their logistics capabilities in general. The only real comparison in the case of Pandemic Horde in recent memory was Goons, and I mean, the first thing we said was, you know, Circle of Two is going to put up a fight, period. So it was going to be a very different war.
We're entering kind of a new kind of paradigm in like actual warfare at this point, though. Like, systems don't matter as much in larger conflicts now. It's very weird. I've just noticed that wars are a lot less just punching someone in the face repeatedly until they realize they've lost. There seems to be a lot more parity now. Like, a lot of the more recent... I don't know if this is just, like, the actual power blocks in EVE kind of adjusting themselves into the kind of stasis that they always tend to get to, but of the latest wars, people seem to have picking, you know, picking fights on roughly equal terms. You know, we've seen the PanFam and NCDOT versus Circle of Two and Test, which is relatively even. One of those was the big ground forces, as it were, of World War B, and the other was, I'm going to call them the Air Force, because they are just the escalation theory par excellence of EVE. A Triumvirate and its only pixels came south, deliberately not bringing their entire coalition to fight Providence, which was a relatively even thing. Before that, we had Volt getting picked on by Lumpy, which was more than an even fight. In fact, I was very, very impressed with how Lumpy did against them, considering how heavily outnumbered they were, and their inability to use capitals under the umbrella of the Stainwagon kind of hegemony in that area. I can't say much about the East, because the East is just Russians doing Russian things. And I don't know quite as much about what happened down in the West, although I do know that Delve just got destroyed by goons. But like the last three wars were like, I'd hesitate to almost call them fair, which is unusual on EVE Online.
It is a bit of a new concept in EVE. The Citadels alone have revolutionized warfare in that it's easier to get a beachhead, arguably. And because of it, we can seed on contracts in Astra Houses a lot more replacement ships, so it's a lot easier for people to get back into the fight almost immediately without having to go all the way home, which could be 15 jumps away in some cases.
Yeah, that is very interesting. Like, because for a long time, you had to be able to take a system to, you know, to start the war. And if you could take a system, you could take any system. If you could take any system, you'd win. It's the same thing with escalation theory. Like, if you can use... if you can drop one Titan... This is why I don't like Tegs, by the way. The new boosts for Titans. I fucking... Like, I detest them as a concept. And I've made that very clear as much as possible. Because the whole kind of, like, dream behind them is, oh, you can drop one Titan to support your fleet. And because you'll use this Titan effect generator, it'll make your fleet better and the enemy fleet worse, because you can build your concept around it. Ah, isn't this great? But the real talk is, if you can bring one Titan, you've already won the fight, because if you're bringing one Titan, you're confident that you can bring one Titan and have it live. And if you can do that, you can bring your entire capital fleet and have it live, just drop a shitload of caps, because those things do not do anything to your capital fleet. They're not designed for that. It's just, it just reeks of like, well, we wanted to give people something. Conceptually, it's fun, but it shouldn't be on a Titan. It doesn't make sense to have it on a Titan at all.
It's seriously flawed. I'm sort of with Jintan in the concept that if you wanted these effect generators, I think what people wanted in their head was sort of like a system-wide effect generator in the same vein as a wormhole system effect, and that you could just put on a larger structure or on a separate structure entirely and have it affect the whole system. The part of the problem with the ones on the Titans that are sort of replacing the Titan bonuses of old is that they're also going to affect the enemy fleet, and that might not be a thing that you want. I think it's one thing to affect, you know, a whole system and work from there. I think it's another thing to affect a grid when a Titan suddenly warps in, and you might realize that may not be a good idea to use the effect at all. Strategic versus tactical planning.
I mean, that kind of reminds me of how Sinojammers used to be back in the day. Of how turning them on and off would actually like massively impact the terrain that you'd be fighting under. And why killing them was so often the thing that fleets died over more than any other objective in old Sov Warfare and Dominion Sov Warfare. But it also forced you to still have to commit capitals to the fight. You were going to be losing a lot, and I love that, like, kind of dichotomy. It gave the defender a huge advantage, but it gave the attacker a huge reason to want to still engage, in that you can completely cripple your enemy in one great Thermopylae-style event.
Nowadays, it's sort of a bit of a moot point. While you can sort of, you know, cut them off from a specific area, it's a bit silly because you can very simply
take gates.
Yeah, you can just take gate. You know, you can sidle into the system next door or next door to that, and just, you know, take a stargate through. And I mean, you don't exactly see most camps capable of stopping 30 titans or worse. I would be pro seeing a concept like that if there were severe penalties to deploying it. And not just money, because, like you said before,
money doesn't
prohibit anything in EVE.
The point, I think, World Will Be is the point at which you can say, okay, like, there's no, like, money doesn't fucking matter anymore. Like,
definitely.
The point at which one single person can finance an entire fucking war is the point at which you have to realize that money means nothing. EVE is all about people. EVE is all about managing your people. Well, to be fair, EVE has always been about managing your people, but that was just like the most egregious like example of it that I've ever seen, and it was great to like vindicate my own personal beliefs, because I love me a bit of confirmation bias.
I mean, that's sort of nothing new in the scale of EVE. I mean, the scale of it and the amount of it has changed pretty dramatically. It's like, okay, now you have Lenny Bucks funding the greatest, you know, turkey shoot in history, essentially, and removing goons from the north. But there have been other entities, either public or private, that have funded wars on that scale previously. I mean, I remember one of the earliest wars, the story was told to me, is that essentially was fought over in the north over literally a Kestrel BPO that someone paid a corporation to do, and said corporation went on to do great things later on. I mean, This concept isn't new to EVE. It's one that's always been present, even from before I played the game. It's just, yes, the scale has changed pretty dramatically because warfare has changed dramatically and has gotten way more expensive.
Yeah, the actual, like, the inflation of doctrines is something that actually makes me quite sad, because, you know, I miss being able to use battlecruisers unironically for strategic ops. I miss, you know, T1 battleships being not basically an afterthought that only exists to bridge the gap between BC and faction BS fleets. The economy view is, like, kind of out of whack right now, but, you know, I wouldn't take it back because I fucking love flying nightmares. Like, nightmares are my boy. Tax our ratters for it. But like, hey, you are selling your fucking nightmare blueprints to us. Or, you know, Fox proverbial gun. Dude, I love them. I was flying them like 2 years ago, though. I just got told off because I lost them a lot. I've always wanted to fly them. They're, in my opinion, the prettiest ship in the game. The fact that they're actually good now is just an extra little thing. But speaking of battleships, actually, what about the Dix? The, new anti-bomb missile things.
A good idea that will either go to shit because classic CCP, or will be excellent. To make it work, it sort of requires a lot of things, and the biggest question in general is, how is it going to know which bombs to attack, etc., etc.? So it's like, well, funny thing about bombs that most people don't know is they're actually Corp and Alliance tagged from who launches them. Will you be able to set settings to the launcher list, something like, only attack people, or only attack bombs not from my alliance or not from this alliance?
Yeah, personally, I'm super happy. There are some issues with them, like right now they don't shoot Citadel bombs. I'm not sure if that's intended or not intended, but I really hope that they get changed to be able to kill Citadel bombs. But my favorite thing about them is basically that it just discourages, like, alliances who only want to bomb and never risk anything at all in the subcap field, because that was kind of degenerate. It got really, really degenerate during Delve 2012, for example. It basically forces you that if you want to use bombers, you can still do that. You just have to either A, coordinate in such a way that you'll bomb them from all angles at once so that they won't be able to fire off enough Dix missiles, or to kill off their destroyers, because you can only fit them to destroyers and, I think, command destroyers, not Tech 3 destroyers. So, basically, you're looking at, hey, if I bring, you know, some Slippery Pete's or something like that, I can still do what I did before, I just have to, you know, be more intricate about it. And I love that. Anything that adds more complexity to something that hard counters like an entire fucking doctrine like T1 battleships is great.
One question I do have is, like, how effective are these things going to be? Because one of the jokes about the old Defender missiles is that not only were they fucking dog shit at how they operated and all that, but a lot of them were quite impotent because most people don't realize this, but when a missile is launched, it's effectively a small ship. It is a ship with a model that has stats and hit points on it, and Defender missiles, generally speaking, didn't even have the power to shoot down, like, one torpedo each. So one question is these new anti-bomb launchers, are they going to be powerful enough to shoot down a single bomb each, or will they be able to shoot down more than one bomb each when they're firing? Or, like, if, like, a bomber wave comes in, are you going to simply need 7 destroyers to shoot them all down? And I mean, we don't really have enough information for any of this yet, but these are a lot of questions. There's many questions coming in for this. It's a good idea on paper. Sort of, you know, experience has told me that, you know, these good ideas on paper don't always work out right.
It's good FC, to be perfectly honest, and good tactics. But, you know, basically as long as you can outrange and properly maneuver your guys or use guerrilla tactics, you're always going to be better. Yeah, Max and Nightmares are probably a little limber. Same with Rattlesnakes. Same with base battleship right now. But the real problem is that you can only use those battleships because of the prevalence of medium long-range turrets. Like, there's a whole, like, a very complex web of balance that leads to long-range battleships being the strongest, and it starts with medium long-range weapons being incredibly strong, as they are right now, due to the prevalence of double optimal bonuses on a lot of ships that have high survivability just baked into their hull. Oh no, they all have weaknesses at short range. People just need to, you know, understand how to adapt and probobe and things like that, but still.
Once upon a time,
however, do have the problem of they can't control range quite as well, or they lose out on like half their DPS. If you're fighting a rattlesnake at 100 kilometers, it's using bouncers, it's not hitting very hard, and it can't use missiles because you have to use like one or two DLAs. Especially if you can end up like fighting at 140 kilometers, it's basically pointless. Like, everyone loves to say how rattles have infinite range. They don't. They have very good short range and very good mid range. Their long range is mediocre.
Once upon a time, pirate battleships like Max and Macarios and Nightmares, rather, they were all like a billion ISK, and this wasn't even particularly that long ago.
3 years, maybe?
Not even. The thing about it, like, they were always more powerful, and they've been only buffed over the years to be more powerful than the Tech 1 and arguably Tech 2 counterparts. But at one point, the price of these things dropped down to 400, 300 million, depending on the ship. So now, I mean, that's not a lot of money for a fleet ship these days, especially if you're a NullSec entity. So I think the balance has been seriously flawed by just the sheer number of these ships on the market and being dropped. So I don't think that's a good thing in general. While I like Macarios and I like Nightmares and all the above, I think these things have gotten simply too cheap for their power. It probably should be something to be looked at, because when you have roving fleets of Nightmares that could simply be SRP tomorrow, and you get a whole new roving fleet of Nightmares, maybe there's an imbalance there. It's one thing if it's Abaddons, but Nightmares,
Understand why there are so many, like, why the price drops so precipitously, right? Basically, it's just due to the fact that the ratting meta, as it were, changed. Effectively, people realized that it was a lot more time efficient to farm the shit out of lower class sites like Nonhavens, if you're only going to be using subcaps, using smart bombing, using the, you know, the smart bombing method, because you can farm a shitload of 6 out of 10 to 8 out of 10 or something like that, escalations. I don't remember. I don't rat. Ratting is really boring, but people have to do it. Basically, they'd farm the shit out of those, and they'd run all of them. And that would give them, you know, roughly equivalent ISK per hour on the normal stuff, and way more ISK per hour on the escalations. So you could end up with, you know, absolute crap loads of money. Or more accurately, they'd actually just sell them to other people who wanted to run them and continue doing smart bombing stuff. Because that was also in itself about as lucrative as capital ratting, but for a lot less effort. And this just meant that there was like a massive amount of guaranteed escalation sites being added to the market. And that in turn just made it so that you would easily be able to have access to all of these items. The same thing happened with a lot of X types. You can really, really see that in the Garistas. Once Goons found out about it in the north back in 2015, you can watch just like, you can watch the fucking market of the Rattlesnake going from like 500, you know, a stable 600, 500 mil ship. Still not expensive because the Rattlesnake wasn't considered particularly great at that time. And then it just tanked to like 250 where it like kind of started to bounce back up. It was ridiculous.
But this sort of goes back into the same circle that the drop rate is simply too high. I mean, I'm looking
well,
at each center
think
right
the
now.
Drop rate
and
it's not too high. The problem is that regular, like, unironically, there are two ways that CCP could fix this. They could either nerf the shit out of smart bomb ratting, or they could buff regular ratting.
I mean, I'm looking at EVE Central right now, and there's 329 units of Nightmares on the market in Empire alone. So, I mean, that's a significant number of fleets that could just simply be whelped today and be replaced tomorrow. 329.
Oh, right, yeah.
Smart bomb ratting is not created equal in all regions. We found that out the hard way. And it's lazy as fuck, and it's so easy. I knew someone that was smart bomb ratting in Providence, and he would get, no joke, about 16 escalations a day.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. That's what caused this imbalance in the economy. And the problem was not that smart bomb ratting, in my opinion. This is my opinion, and the problem is that it's not that smart bomb ratting is too good. It obviously has some issues, but still. The problem was that just, like, CCP kind of had like tanked NullSec ratting in certain areas so badly that that became the optimal way to play, and that had massive knock-on effects to the economy. But I don't think that they should buff NullSec ratting anyway, because the cat's out of the bag at this point, and people will probably convince their members to just keep doing it.
It's already pretty significantly difficult. Speaking from a newbie organization, you know, our youngest pilots actually have quite a lot of difficulty fighting, especially in Grissa's territory compared to Serpentis territory. In Serpentis territory, not even a day into the game, they could be belt ratting, and tomorrow they could be ratting in the lowest class anomalies in NullSec. Grissa's ratting, for example, is not possible without quite a lot more work. So this is actually a pretty significant barrier, especially in the case of alphas coming next week, everyone. It's actually a serious concern in Pandemic Horde as to what we're going to do and how we're going to have them all make money. Later on, I mean, like, even a cheap-ass Vexer can compete and do these anomalies quite a bit if you know what you're doing, but the earliest days, eh.
Yeah, my host highlight has to be getting to the airport in America and being welcomed by my friends there with a giant 6x4-foot American flag that they decided to throw over me as I arrived, took me to a Cracker Barrel to enjoy some good old-fashioned biscuits and gravy. Which I had been arguing with them for about 3 years about that briskets and gravy would be horrible because it's just cookies and brown gravy. Turns out it's not that. It's pretty great. I'm probably going to try and make some.
My highlight was walking away from Alec and spending an hour washing my hands with lye and bleach. No, really, it was just sort of being in Vegas. I enjoy it tremendously that, like, I want to go back right away. I don't even want to wait for you. I want to go tomorrow. It was so much fun. It was just crazy. Like I said, you know, TV and movies just don't do it justice at all. It's just insane, and I loved every moment of it. Even when I was walking 2 or 3 miles up the strip in tremendous pain on my back and my feet, it was still so much fun.
Fly smart.
Bye.
Guitar.